Okay, so guys, we're in the middle of Chovas Adam Ba'olamo. Last time, just to recap, we ended off discussing that a person, if he focuses what the purpose of Hashem putting him in this world was, so we said a person was created lehis'aneg al Hashem, v'lehanos miziv shechinasa, right, to get pleasure from Hashem and to get hanah from the shechina. And we said that this world does not properly facilitate that kind of pleasure. This world, you can get pleasure in this world, but it's not going to be the real deal. And since we mentioned last week also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't do anything halfway. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nature is that he's kol kulo everything.
You have contradiction to if you didn't actually deserve it to give it either.
No, that's in addition. We didn't get there yet. That's an addition. Right? But before we even get there, we said HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't give you something which is kind of sort of great. It has to be the best. No, before we get to that, I'm just saying, whatever good Hashem wants to be mashpia on you, it has to be, by definition, the best. It can't be less than the best.
The best for you.
What?
Be the best.
No, it's the best. Meaning, if Hashem is going to give you something which he calls good, it has to, by definition, be the ultimate good. It can't be like, yeah, some people like it, some people don't, they think it's okay.
We can't take it.
No, so in this world, we're not capable of experiencing the ultimate good because we're ruba de ruba physical. By definition, we can't get the ultimate good. You know, I was reading in the Rabbi Yaakov Hillel book here. He's saying that he said they gave a mashal where he said that, let's say there's a very very poor man, right, and he thinks that he's going to do a big favor for the king, and he ends up saving the king's life. So the king asks him for. He says, would you like a reward? So he said, I'll take a reward. And the king says, I want to give you the ultimate reward. You saved my life. So he says, I want you to marry my daughter, and I want you to, you know, be prince. And eventually, one day, you'll inherit the throne. And the poor man, that doesn't mean anything to him. He's like, my reward is a shidduch. Like, I don't need a shidduch. What are you giving this to me for? So he says, no, Mr. King, when I was passing by your house the other day, I noticed you have this whole separate wing for the stables, and you have these beautiful horses, and it would be amazing for me to just give me one of those horses instead. You give me the horse right this minute. I have myself a brand new beautiful horse, and then we can go part ways. He says, why would the man be so stupid as to say such a thing? He could just hold out, marry the daughter, you know, live a good, happy life, and he'll inherit all the horses. He'll have everything. It's because he's so limited in his hasagos, he can't possibly think big. He doesn't know what it means to think big, because he thinks that pleasure means, oh, if I only would have a beautiful horse, right, or the modern version of that. If I only have a beautiful car, then everything would be perfect, right? So he's saying, it's a guy, you know, the richest man in the world wants to reward you, so you say, oh, I notice you have a collection of fine Italian sports cars. I'll take one of the cars. He was going to give you everything. He was going to bring you close to him. He was going to let you live with him. He was going to let you have everything he had, eat everything he eats. And you said, nah, all I ever wanted was one of those fancy cars. So that's, you know, we're so limited in this world. It doesn't mean that nothing good can ever happen to us in this world. It just means that what happens to us in this world, by definition, isn't the reward. Because it can't be. It's so limited, right? What happens in this world is by definition, the finite version of what happens in the next world. Yeah.
What's an example of something even like the smallest possible? I just don't understand. I'm trying to think. Like, what would be the horse nowadays? Like, what would that, like, what is that? Like, do
car?
Like?
Yeah, he said a car.
No, not the car. No, that's just a question on your story. Saying the actual good, the idea of, like, what's considered, like, even, like, a limited version of good that we experience in this world.
No, I mean, so here's the thing. I don't want to get too involved in this because it's not really a Mesilas Yesharim discussion. For example, they talk about in the Derech Hashem and in the Nefesh HaChaim, they talk about Hishtalshalus, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a physical world from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's completely spiritual, was he used the koach of Hishtalshalus, which means that he created a world below him which was 99.999% spiritual and 0.001% physical. These statistics are not to scale. And then, in turn, there was a world below that world which was 0.001% more physical. And downward, it was a whole, and that's the Hebrew word, hishtalshalus, it was a whole, you know, a chain of events leading to our world, which is a physical world. Because it was, don't know what the right term for it is, but it would it's just not fitting. It's not proper for a spiritual being like HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create a physical world straight away. He had to create many, many gedarim between the spiritual realms and our. And that's why Nevi Chaim starts off the whole Sefer by discussing that every little action we do in this world reverberates through the upper worlds all the way, and it explodes in its infinite form in front of the Kisei HaKavod. And he's saying, and he gives a lot of different explanations. He's saying that each world is like the lavush of the world that's above it. You know, like our clothing covers who we really are inside, and our bodies cover our neshama. Our bodies are the lavush for our neshama, and so too this world is the lavush for the next world, which is like the neshama of that world, and that world is the lavush for the next one, going all the way up to the top. So by definition, if you get, I'm just making up a number, if you get $1 million in this world, that's the finite version of what the real schar could have been in the upper worlds. You know, just to expand on this a tiny bit.
Is it like if I keep Shabbos, is that the ultimate? Or what?
No, when you keep, so when a person keeps Shabbos,
blessing in this world and the next world.
Right, but you get the blessings in this world. That's a big discussion in the different Rishonim at what exactly schar in this world is. But just to simply put, schar in this world is the finite version of what exists in reality. So therefore, by definition, it's always going to be limited. Even if Hashem gives you infinite, he gives you a ton of money. He gives you $1 trillion. It's a finite amount of money. So it's not by definition the real reward. He gives you 15, you know, different Italian sports cars. But by definition, it's a limited amount, right? Yeah, so that's the idea. So anything that happens to a person in this world is not the real reward. Just let me expand on that for 1 second. Let's take what you're saying. That there's a maral who says that's why, you know, when we talk about, oh, you want a Russia, he gets rewarded in this world and not in the next world. Now, you ever heard this before? One of the explanations for tzaddik v'ralo and Russia v'tovlo is that we want the tzaddik to get his punishment in this world, and we want the Russia to get his reward in this world. Why? What's the difference? Which world it happens? And the answer is, and before we get to the answer, sorry. And number two, is that even fair? Meaning, if a tzaddik does a mitzvah, he gets his reward in the next world, and if a Russia does a mitzvah, he gets a reward. That's not fair. So the Maharal says two important yisodos. He says number one, a tzaddik is going to get the same reward no matter whether it's in this world or the next world. But if you give it to him here, he's getting the finite version of it. So by definition, it's always better for him to get it in the next world. But it's not that he's getting shortchanged. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being mashpia. He's sending out the same amount of reward points. Just if it happens in Olam Haba, it's in full effect. If it happens in this world, it's completely limited. Right. It's not worse. It's the same thing, just the totally limited version. And therefore, it's not at nearly as good. It's infinitely worse. You know what I'm saying? It's the same, yet it's infinitely worse. And the flip side is the Russia gets his reward in this world, because he's getting the, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have to wait till he got to the next world, he would get the infinite version of that reward. And therefore he gets it in this world. That's still not fair. So the Maharal says, no, it's fair, because that's goof of who the Russia is. What makes him a Russia is that he only lives for this world. He wants everything in this world. So by definition, it's only appropriate. It would only be a fitting reward for him if he would get it in this world. So that's goof of what he wants, as opposed to a tzaddik who's dafka living his life, not living it only for this world. He's living it to create something special in the next world. So it's only appropriate for him to get his reward in the next world. Now, these are some of the things we're playing around with.
With Esau, that's his whole thing was like he's for this world, and right. Yitzchak blessed him. When he blessed him, he gave him a blessing that he should have a good life on this world, like something we right. do. So, and it says in like a midrash that he did it so that he wouldn't get any reward in the next world.
Right, but the same thing, also that's why many use that idea to explain what that pasuk, strange pasuk, Haliteni namin ha-adom ha-adom hazeh, ki ayef anochi al-king karashmo edom. Right, he says the word red twice in the pasuk, right? In my house last week we had, usually have chicken soup Friday night, we had red lentil soup instead. Because, it's our Parsha soup. I don't know. So, you did that also?
No, I mean, usually we do. I wasn't home this past week.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah, every other. But this
year. You know why lentils? Good. Lentils?
Good. Circle.
Fravelis. Yeah.
So, what are
you doing, Josh? So they say, what's the pshat? They called him Edom because he said red. Like he said red. So it's that's goof of the Teretz that he sees only the surface. He sees only the color. Color is, you know, like a blind person can't see color because color is only something that relates to sight. It doesn't relate to any of the deeper senses. Okay. So therefore, he was saying like, give me some of that. He defined it as that red stuff. Like, I refuse to see 1 centimeter beneath the surface of anything. And that's that was Gufa his name. Alkein Kara Shmo Edom. That's why they called him Edom, because that was an avid description of what he was all about. You know, anyway.
Also, wait, just one more thing. Just also, maybe your reward is just keeping the Torah, because when you keep the Torah, you're happier. It teaches you how to
Right. So that's a question, meaning how much of the life rewards counts as reward.
When you're in Torah, then
right, right. Is that, is that right? So, if, for example, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam will say that's not the reward at all. That's just what we call, that's just natural. That's just natural. It's natural. Meaning mitzvah goreris mitzvah, right? It's mitzvah goreris mitzvah. Meaning saying all the times it says in the Torah, if you keep the Torah, it's going to rain properly, and you're going to have all these good things happen to you. That's all just Hashem paving the way for you to be satisfied. It's not a bonus. It's the Torah. It's a self-perpetuating cycle that the Torah is trying to put you through, so that if it's paving the way for you to do more Torah and more mitzvahs. But it's not. That's not the reward for your mitzvahs. Okay. Anyway, let's go a little further. It says, "Vimtamik od beinyan." If you go a little deeper into the matter, "Tirakia olam nivra l'shimush adam." This world. So before, he presented the world kind of as a battleground and an ability to. And basically, it was mostly negative, saying like, this world is going to create failure for us if we get too involved in it. So now he's saying, no, the world was created for us to use. Omnam ki hine omed b'shikul gadol, but there is a great balance that he has to draw here. Ki ima adam nimshach achara olam misrachik miboro. If a person just gets completely pulled into this world and distanced from his creator, hine hu miskalkel, he gets ruined. Umikalkel ha'olam imo, and that lowers the status of the physical world as well. I mean, he's ruining the world together with him. Vimusholei ba'atzmo v'nidbak b'boro u'mishtamish min ha'olam. But if he, on the flip side, he rules over himself and he clings to his maker and he uses this world as an intermediary to help him serve Hashem, who misala, he goes up, and the rest of the world goes up with him. It's a great kedusha for the rest of the world that they get to be used as the tools to serve Hashem. Who can inyan mash amru chazal, v'inyan ha'or sheganza kodesh baruch hu letzadikim, v'zeleshon. He quotes the Gemara in Chagiga, you know, when it says that a kodesh baruch hu created light on the first day, he said, that's not the light we're going to end up using. We're going to use just the light of the heavenly luminaries. So he says, what did he do with the light? So kevan shara kodesh baruch hu or sheganza letzadikim, when he saw the light, he said, we're going to keep it away for the tzadikim in the next world. Samach, he rejoiced, shenemar or tzadikim yismach. Right, that's this week's parsha. What does it say about the stones that Yaakov used to put around his head? Each one of the stones was fighting, you know, again, symbolically, each one of the stones was fighting, please let the tzaddik use me to rest his head. The Midrash Kohelas she'amru zeh l'shonam re'eis maaseh Elokim b'shoah she'baruch Kodesh Baruch Hu es Adam Harishon natlu ve'achziru al kol ilanei Gan Eden v'amr lo. Right, he said Hashem brought Adam Harishon around all the trees in Gan Eden, and he said to him, re'ei maasai kamanom u'mashubachim heim v'chol ma'aseh barasi b'shvil cha barasi. Look how beautiful and praiseworthy all of my things are, and I created everything for you. Tein datcha shelo tekalkel v'tachre v'solami. Right, pay attention that you should not damage and destroy my world, right? So this is the yisod, and just a quick marshal to explain this yisod is that, you know, you go to the Hall of Fame in any walk of life. It could be a sports Hall of Fame, a rock and roll Hall of Fame, whatever it is. You go to the Hall of Fame, you see this is the glove that Babe Ruth wore when he pitched for the Red Sox. you know, what's a, that's a glove. It looks like, you know, it doesn't even look like, you know, a winter glove that we would use. It's like a little piece of leather you wear on your hand. You, the ball would, you know, break right through your hands if you tried to catch it. You know, so he said, what's so chashuv about this glove? The answer is Babe Ruth used this glove. So it's chashuv because the, you know, the greatest baseball player played baseball with this glove. So the world understands this concept. We understand what it means. You know, this is the guitar that, you know, that the Beatles played, you know, on stage when they went on the Ed Sullivan Show or whatever. It's in, you know, I'm making, I don't know if it's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I've never been to, I only went to Cleveland once for a wedding. I wasn't, I didn't spend too much time there. But, I don't know, it was a pretty nice place when I was there. But the idea is that, that what's so special about this guitar? Nothing. It's the same guitar as everybody else's guitar. But if Jimi Hendrix played this guitar, now all of a sudden it's something. You know, why? Because it rises in Kedusha based on the person who used it.
Goes from a teenager, right? Guitar to...
Yeah, because the world understands this concept that if you use things in a superior way, then they become special. That's what he's saying here. He says if we use the world as a means to serve the Ribbono Shalom, we're not just helping ourselves. We're bringing out the potential that exists in everything Hashem created to be used for our good. I don't know, guys in Chumash last year, I don't know if you remember, we used that we used to explain the Meshech Chachma about the Nazir. Like one of the things that this could be what the Meshech Chachma means, not clear, but he said that when the Nazir swears off wine, he's basically making a statement, wine equals bad. So Meshech Chachma is not true. There are mitzvahs that you can do with wine. You know, you make Haddol al HaKos, Kiddush al HaKos, you know, Simchas Yantif, right? Even Tumah. You know, we say the concept of becoming Tumah, like the word Tumah is synonymous with bad, but it's not actually true. Even a Kohen is supposed to be Metameh himself for the Zion Krovim. It's a mitzvah. You can imagine, you know, there's one of the Aseres HaDibros is Kibud Avim. One of the ways to do Kibud Avim is to be Metameh yourself, to go to honor your parents at their, you know, to say a guy wasn't able to be maspid his parents at their own funeral because he couldn't become Tameh. Tumah is bad. I can't do Tumah. Right? So if a guy's a Nazir, he's not allowed to become Tameh, even if he's going to his own parents' funeral. So that's already, you see that everything Hashem created, every concept, every construct can be used for serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not limited to things that we view as good. It's our job to bring that out of it. Klalo shel davar, what's the yisod, what's the rule? Lo nivra, adam lo nivra bavur matzava b'olam hazeh. We weren't created for our situation in this world. Ela bavur matzava b'olam haba, ela shem matzava b'olam hazeh, hu emtza'i b'lo matzava b'olam haba, shehu ha-tachliti. We spoke this out already. Al-kein timtza ma'amari chazal rabim, kulam b'signo nechad medam la'olam hazeh, l'makom uzman ha'chana v'olam haba, so this world is a preparatory situation for the next world. It's an entrance hall. This way, this world is an entrance hall for the next world. Right? Right? All the different mishalim that Chazal used. Let's just go a little further. This is a new spin on it. He says, "V'tira," and you'll see, "Ki be'emes shekvar lo yuchal shum bal seichel lahamin shetachlis brias adam lematzav b'olam hazeh." He says, if you really think about it, there's no way anyone who was thinking about it would really understand that we're here only for this world. Ki ma'him chayi adam b'olam hazeh. What does one's life consist of in this world? O mihu shesameach v'shalev mamish b'olam hazeh. Who's really happy and peaceful in this world? Who has real serenity in this world, right? And he quotes the pasuk and tells him, "Yemesh no seinu b'hem shivim shana, v'megvuro shmonim shana, v'rachbam amel v'oven." Right? How long do you really live? 70 years, 80 years, and what do? We work hard and we do foolish things. So you live a life. You have a lot of pain and illness and things that are hurting you and bothering you. And after Acher calls those hamavis, and then you die, right? What do you say when a guy's having a really bad day? So the guy says, you know, you tell a guy who's having a really, really bad day that something bad happened to you. So what does he say? Yeah, life stinks, and then you die, right? So he's paraphrasing David HaMelech. So not really, but he's saying, what is life in this world? It's not. It's so limited. It's so. You know, it doesn't mean there's no joy in it, but if you really take a cheshbon ha-nefesh about all the, you know, we have, it's amazing, amazing gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. We have the ability that to fixate on a few great things that happened to us over the course of time, and we'll look back, we're like, that was so great, that whole year was so great. Now, the whole year was average, and there were those three great days in the middle of the year, which were like machshir the entire year to being this amazing, great time. You know, a person goes on vacation, he works hard 50 out of 52 weeks a year, and he goes on an awesome two-week vacation, and it was all worth it. You know, so that's one way to look at it, which is beautiful, and it's an amazing gift that Hashem gave us. But a Baal Seichel also has to say, how were the other 50 weeks? Were they worth it? Were they worthwhile? You know, or I'm just going to block out the 90 plus percent of my life in favor of the 10% that's actually blissful. That doesn't make any sense. So he says, Echad mine elef lo yimatzei sheyarba olam lo hanos v'shalva amitis. Not even 1 out of 1,000 people will find that this world fills him with true restfulness and pleasure.
That's the great thing about Shabbos. At least a seventh of your life is serenity.
Yeah, at least a seventh of your life. But even on Shabbos, meaning you look back, you know, I was at a friend's house last year, I remember my friend's wife was telling us that she found a posting on some blog, which she found very comforting, which was some woman complaining about how Friday night is in her house every week, how she has all these plans and everything's going to go this, and then this kid gets sick, and this kid throws up, and this kid has a dirty diaper, and this kid, and like when you look up, the kid's ruined it again, you know. And if you can hop 5 minutes where this kid actually says their parsha sheet, and this kid actually sings a song, and this kid actually does something, it's great, the best Friday night ever, you know. So you read it, you're like, good, it's not just my house. And then also you appreciate, you know, that you appreciate how hard it is. Even Shabbos, you know, you want everything to be smooth and tranquil and good and go exactly the way you planned, and you have all these ideas of how things are going to go, and then it goes the way it goes. You don't get to control that. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about here. He's saying even within our Shabbos, even within our mitzvos, you know, how this guy goes to 3-hour morning seder, you know, and he sits and he learns how much did he actually get done in 3 hours. You know, I'm not talking about a guy who went for 3 minutes. A guy sits in morning seder in yeshiva, and he really wants to get a real grasp of the sugya. So and he pounds it for 3 hours straight, and then he looks up and he really got a good kinyan on like half a Tosfos. You know, so it's not, and that's not a bad thing at all. That's not a bad thing at all. But it has to be understood that life is so limited. Life is so, you know, the amount of emesa pleasure you're going to get in this world is so limited that this is not what we're here for. It becomes obvious to us that this is not the end of it all. Now, again, it doesn't mean you shouldn't, you know, make the most of it. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get the best of it. But it does mean that when you analyze it, it's really, you know, when you do a true cheshbon nefesh, it's really not that great. It's really not that important in the eyes of what it could be. You know, so he's saying, that's what he's saying. V'lo'od el she'im tachlis b'riyas adam l'tzarech olam hazeh lo'hoya tzarech v'nei zeh she'tenufach bo neshama kol kach hashuva ve'elyona she'tiyah gedola yosem in ha'malachim atzmam. If this world was it, why would Hashem give us such an amazing and holy soul that is even holier and greater than the one that would the malachim? Our soul is not going to feel any pleasure in the normal pleasures of this world. Right? So you have a regular peasant who marries a princess. Right, so if he could bring her all the pleasures in the world that he thinks are so great, but she's not going to think anything of it because she's a princess. Kacha nefesh, ilu hevesa lakom adonai olam, eno klum lo. You could bring your soul all the pleasures of this world, it's not going to feel anything. Lama shehi
mit. What pleasure? Physical.
You're going to bring your soul all the physical pleasures of this world. It's not going to think. You're not. You know, think about. I don't know. You could. You don't have to tell me if you agree or disagree with what I'm saying, but I can just tell you personally, and I can tell you from a lot of what other people have told me, is that you do something which you know go to a certain concert, a certain party or whatever, and you think it's going to be this unbelievable great experience, and even b'shas ma'isa some of it really is that great, but then like a lot of times you talk to people about when they turn themselves around, or when they at least had in mind to turn themselves around. And they'll say it was after something which was supposed to be so great, And then when you were done, you just felt completely empty.
Shabbaton.
What?
I became very religious after Shabbaton.
Right. Was it that? It was because it was good or bad?
Bad.
Or it was bad?
And it was good. I thought it was going to be very good. And it was good, but it wasn't as good as I thought. So I became more religious after that.
Right. So, but that's the idea, that you go through an experience.
How much more from your depression had gone.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but well, freshmen, I left. Anyway, the
no, they just don't participate in anything.
Yeah,
it'd be bad.
Yeah, so Lamaisa, you know, you feel this. What is that emptiness? So you could suggest that emptiness that a person feels is that his neshama is just like saying to him, you know, you got to feed me. You're only feeding the goof. You're not giving me anything to work with here. And it's bothering you. It's saying, I need some nourishment here. I need something. And I'm not getting any hana out of this. You know,
when you said that example about the concert, is that like the soul or whatever it is? Like,
again, I can't say for sure because I don't know. He's saying like you basically, that's an example of a purely Olam Hazeh experience, and you're not giving me anything, and your neshama is starving. And what?
Is it actually physically?
Like a good comes is like
it could. You know, depending on what you're doing with it. I'm not saying what concert, not concert. I'm talking about something which is a very, right. A drasha, a speech, you know, like a rap concert is a speech, as far as I'm concerned. So he went to a lengthy speech. At a certain point, you feel very empty. It's very rare that a person comes back from doing a mitzvah feeling empty. You know, you come back from. Good. I'm saying it's not even a question of good as much as a question of you feel full.
Are you saying there's a correlation then?
I think there's a correlation. I can't prove it.
I can't prove it.
I think it's just like Pergia was like the mitzvah that you get for like the reward you get for a mitzvah is another mitzvah.
Right, but that's what I was saying before. That's along the lines we were saying before. That's the idea that at Kodesh Baruch Hu, when a person does a mitzvah, so. Kadosh Baruch Hu, in addition to the schar that a person gets, he also creates a situation where he paves the way for you to have the ability to do more mitzvos. So a lot of that satisfaction, a lot of that ability that gets created is there for a person to be able to do more mitzvos. Okay, let me just finish the paragraph. So he says, "V'chein amruzal." This is what Chazal said in Pirkei Avos: "Al korcha chatanot, v'al korcha chatanolad." You're created against your will, and you're born against your will. The neshama doesn't want to be brought down to this world. And he says, Hashem wouldn't put a neshama in a place and say, all right, this is the end of it for you. You know, you can, so you have to basically be created just to be sent down into this world. That's not what the neshama is for. The neshama is for getting kedusha out of this world, but just to be in this world, lishma, just to be in this world to exist and embrace this world completely is not something that's going to satisfy the neshama. The neshama is not here for that. You know, it's just one quick mashal that I heard also in the Rabbi Yaakov Hillel book that he said that if you have you know, you spend a lot of money and you hire the Rosh Yeshiva of the universe to come give a shiur, and you bring him, you know, you get a nice car, drive him around in, and he's prepared his best material. He's going to give a high level shiur. So you pass by the big kollel in the neighborhood, and you pass by the big yeshiva gadol in the neighborhood, and then you pass by the high school, and you pass by the elementary school, and you pass by, and you drop him off in front of the kindergarten. You know, you say, okay, Rebbe, we're here. Where are you going to hear the shiur? So he gets out and he wants to say Torah, but the kids are all there. They're 3, 4, 5 years old. They can't. What is he going to tell him? So he gives him a shmooze on Aleph Beis, and he says, this is an Aleph that says or nothing, as the case may be, and this is a Beis, and it says Buh, and this is a Gimel, and okay, so he doesn't want to teach them nothing, but he's thinking to himself the whole time, he's like, this wasn't what I was planning on doing. You know, it's like I had a whole thing prepared, you know, and okay, so listen, for the crowd that I'm in, this is what I have to say over, but this is not what I came here to do. So it's a shame you brought me all the way out here so I could teach Aleph Beis. Doesn't make any sense. He says you create a neshama and you bring it into this world, and then you offer it kol tanuge olam hazeh. He says, like, you didn't need to bring me here for this. You know, you didn't have to schlep me all the way out here so you could offer me a better steak. You know, more money. You can offer me more cars, more, you know, bigger houses. It's not doing me any good. Like, you didn't need me for that. You could have just brought the body out here for that. You didn't need me here. So it's that, it's the same idea that a person understands. And like you guys said, as you mature more, you notice that you have an neshama. You notice that you try your best to tune it out. You know, you have to have a little bit of peace and quiet in your life to remind yourself that you have such a neshama. But when you do, you have those moments where you hear that your neshama is telling you, all right, I'm here, use me. You know, I'm here, you brought me down into this world, I didn't want to come here, but I'm here, so you may as well give me something that's going to nourish me, give me something that's going to take advantage of me. Don't ask me to constantly, say Aleph Beis all the time. You know, use me for something bigger and better. Anyway, all right, we'll hold here. It's a shame. Next week we should be able to finish the parak. Have a good night.
So it's 120 being healthy.
I mean, it's quite the bracha.